Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you apply the hope of the gospel of Jesus Christ to everyday life.
Welcome back to Abound in Hope. I am Rex Gorman. I am sitting here with...
I am Tom McGregor.
And I'm Darren Larson.
Yeah, and we are... We've been in, I guess, the past several weeks in a new series on the podcast called Lampstands. Darren, what's Lampstands?
Yeah, we started this podcast because Jesus loves the church, and so do we. And yeah. So we wanted to build a bit of unity within the context of church ministry, both locally and abroad. We've done that several ways. One, by being involved in the life of the church in our area here in Woodinville and Bothell and beyond, but as well as connecting with churches outside of that sphere a little bit, like for church plants in Portland and some a couple weeks ago we released one from Justin Anderson in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles, yeah.
And so it's kind of fun to have that that connection. It all comes from Revelation 1 and 2. Where we have a picture of Jesus walking amongst the seven golden lampstands, which represent literal churches back in that day, but also I think just the seven's the number of completion. It's a symbolic number for Jesus walks amongst the church, and he walks amongst Imprint Church and all the churches around the world.
But not just amongst Imprint Church,
no,
right?
Yeah, all the churches. Yeah. And that's the amazing thing about serving Jesus in the context of the church is that he is with you when you worship together as the people of God, wherever you're at.
Yeah, it's super encouraging. So what we've been doing in this is we've been talking to pastors that we know that are either in the area or that we have some kind of connection with and aren't in the area. Today we're going to talk with someone who is not really in the area or close to in the area, but pretty far from the area.
And that we met on Sunday.
Yes, that's true.
Like literally 4 days ago.
You guys have never met?
Never. Like seriously, we had never met before
far
until
out,
Sunday.
Man.
So I'm talking to him on Sunday and I'm like, this is a compelling story.
Yeah. And so you emailed him like last night.
I emailed him last night and he emailed me back and said, I was like, dude, I have this wild hair idea.
Yeah.
I would love for you to share your story. Who knows? Maybe you'll get someone listening to our podcast who wants to drop you like $10,000 or something.
Who knows?
And I didn't really say that. But you should if you listen.
Yeah, if you listen and you're compelled. If you're wondering, what should I do with all this money?
Yeah, exactly.
What's give it that away? Like?
Yeah, seriously. to that end, we have a very, very special guest with us today named Gordy Beck. Gordy, how are you, man?
I'm doing great, and thanks so much that I can be with you guys.
Yeah, it's awesome. I ended up talking to your wife on Sunday, and she was talking about what you guys are doing. So where are you guys right now? Where are you based?
We're in Tyrol, Austria.
Hmm.
And that is where my wife actually is from. She's Austrian, and she's from Tyrol, but we are serving in an area, it's called Außerfern. And if you translate that literally, it means beyond far away.
That's awesome. Amazing.
Yeah, she told me about that on Sunday. That's pretty incredible.
Is it rural church ministry? Is that what it is?
It's very rural.
Yeah.
It's very rural. It's very mountainous. And my father-in-law says, the narrower the valley, the more narrow the mines.
Oh, yeah. Oh really?
Really true. I mean, I love the people there, but... they don't get out much. You know?
When I think of Austria, I go to the Sound of Music. I go to amazing mountains and hills. The hills are alive. You know, whatever it is. Like that's what is that Austria? I mean, is it?
Yes, the hills are alive with the Sound of Music.
That's amazing.
I mean, it's an amazing country. We've been there now 14 years. Huh. We were 12 years in Salzburg.
Mm-hmm.
And now 2 years in this small town, and it's been a adjustment. You know, serving in a rural area.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, hey, let's back up. Let's back up a little while because you're not from Austria originally.
I'm from Bothell, which is right next to Woodinville.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, that's far from Salzburg or Außerfern. Is that how you say it?
Yeah,
Außerfern. Yeah, that's far from there. So did you grow up in the area? Did you grow up in church? Did you grow up going to church anywhere?
Or? I went to a little church in downtown Bothell that unfortunately no longer exists.
Mm-hmm.
For years, they were trying to restart and reinvent themselves. And finally, they just said, this isn't working. And so they decided this time to close shop. But I had, when I was going there, there were three people in the youth group, and I was one of them.
Okay. Nice.
And when I got my driver's license, I said, I want to go to a different church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I started going to North Shore Church, which is in the area here. And I don't know. That was important for me. You know, that's when I decided this is the church I want to go to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And so faith was important to you as a kid, then it sounds like that was an important part of your life growing up.
Yeah, we always went to church, and I can remember hiding under my blanket with a flashlight and reading my Bible.
That's awesome. Well, that's
like cool. A rebellious child.
Right.
What compelled you about, like, the Bible? What compelled you about church? Like, if I was going to a church where I was one of three and I got my driver's license, my... like response would have been, I don't want to go anywhere. Mm. But you were like, I want to go somewhere else. So what compelled you?
Well, you know, I remember believing in Jesus as a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I even went to a Christian daycare, and, you know, with 4 years old, I believed in Jesus. I knew Jesus loved me.
Yeah.
So that was a place of stability. But my life really changed when I realized that Jesus doesn't just love me, but he's my Lord. Mm-hmm. Mm. And for me, the picture that I got at that time is as Jesus as a good general. Mm-hmm. And he's not a general sitting back in some safe bunker or something, but he is leading the troops, and he's leading forward for justice and for freedom.
Yeah.
And he is calling us to follow him and obey whatever that means. Mm-hmm. Mm. And so this picture was really motivating for me as a young person, and yeah, my whole life, really.
Sweet. That's incredible. You're going to make Tom McGregor cry.
Every time I get weepy if we start talking about Jesus.
That's awesome.
I like that you said a general leading forth for justice and righteousness. And I mean, that's a cool picture. I love that.
When did that vision of Jesus come about? How did that come about? And about how old were you when that happened?
You know, I was a teenager, so young, you know, 12 or 13, actually, you know, somewhere
Sweet.
Around that age. My once upon a time babysitter became a pastor, and he was speaking on that night when he shared this story about Jesus and, like, cast this new vision for me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I mean, people say Jesus is Lord. A lot.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah
it's
yeah,
not
yeah.
like it's in
a lot of
stuff.
A lot of things. Yeah.
Biblical.
But for me, that was like,
oh,
I get it now. Yeah. Oh, okay. That's what Lord means.
Sweet.
Yeah. Is that what caused you to kind of think my life needs to go towards ministry at that point? I mean, were you at that age, or was that kind of like later on as well? And you were just trying to get through school at the moment?
Not really. You know, it was for me, it was more of I need to follow Jesus in my daily life.
Nice.
So it didn't mean I'm going to follow Jesus and therefore I have to become a pastor.
Yeah. Yeah. It just means whatever. Yeah. It means whatever I'm doing, I'm following Jesus.
Well, obedience.
Yeah. Obedience.
You know?
Yeah.
Is the babysitter / pastor still a pastor in the area?
He is a pastor.
Okay.
Jeff, and I'm trying to pull up his last name now.
Sure.
He's serving the Lord, and I've told him this story, and it's good to have these kind of people who've invested in your life.
It is.
Yeah, for sure.
I remember reaching out to someone who spoke at the high school camp where I became a Christian years later. I was an adult and said, hey, just so you know, I'm a pastor now, and he was just amazed. It was like an encouraging story to him as well. Those stories are amazing, what people do in our lives and in their attempt at doing ministry as well, which is super cool. So, okay, so you grew up here. What do you do after high school? What was the next step for you?
So I went to Shoreline Community College.
Nice.
And while I was there, the library was selling their old books that nobody wanted anymore.
That's cool.
And I'm digging through there, and I picked up some book, and it's called, The Gospel and Justice, something along those lines. And it just, again, a new epiphany for what it means to be a Jesus follower. And I may have found there also a different book by Ron Sider called Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anyways, at the same time I found this book, I don't know where I found that one. And and that it just really gave me a new vision for my life and the responsibility to love people, especially the poor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I read these books and they're affecting my life, and I graduate from college and I'm looking for a job. And I'd done an internship at the Union Gospel Mission and they asked me, do you want to stay here and do that? And I had applied for a different job in London, England, doing like street evangelist.
Huh. No way.
Yeah, it's a cool thing. I think it's still out there. So anybody who wants to check that out, street evangelist, you don't really get paid. You get a room and you get a stipend for your meals. But I thought that'd be really cool.
Wow. Yeah.
So I'm praying about these two options and I'm not hearing any answers. And I don't know what should I do, this one or that one. And finally, I prayed something different. I said, well, God, what do you want me to do? And it was like I heard an audible voice. It's like, well, finally, you asked the right question.
yeah. Instead of asking, what do I want to do? Ask the Lord, what do you want me to do? Is that what it was?
Yeah. Cool. Or instead of asking, do you want me to do A or B?
Huh. It was, what do you want me to do?
Yeah. Right? Yeah, may be a C or an F or.
That's cool.
Right. And when, and, you know, God just said, hey, you know, I want you to be a missionary. I want you to go abroad. I want you to go serve the poorest of the poor. And I said, okay. well, really what I said is, you know, God, this is not a job. I'm thinking of a job.
Yeah, yeah.
Something that makes money. Me some money.
Right, yeah. exactly. Yeah. Not something that costs me literally everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I was listening to the Bible on CD at the time.
Good call.
Back in those days when it was on CDs. Yeah, totally.
And in the background, Jesus says, you know, why are you arguing about bread? So in the Gospel of Matthew, he talks about this. He says, beware of the yeast of the Pharisees.
Yep.
And the disciples are confused what he means by that. And they think he means somebody forgot to buy bread.
Yeah.
And God spoke to me there. He said, don't worry about the money. Huh. And that's my side. And it's been 20 years. God's taken care of me.
Sweet.
I love, by the way, sometimes this is totally off topic, but I love how sometimes God uses his words in kind of a supernatural way like that, you know, like that is an amazing moment, like where the Lord speaks to you through his word. That story has a context, right? And all that kind of stuff. But you're sitting there and the Lord uses his words in that time to actually direct your life. That's when I think the word of God is living and active, sharper than a two-edged sword. You know, this is penetrates. This is where I see. So that's anyway, thanks for sharing. That's cool. I like that. So 20 years in ministry, huh? And you've, what kind of ministry have you done? And then tell us about those ministries.
Well, my first ministry was in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And this is 20 years ago, so.
Yeah, this is 2002.
That's tough timing.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, from an
American standpoint,
the worldly wisdom would say, oh, probably not a good idea. That won't be safe or comfortable. Mm.
Right.
And you're like, yeah, front lines sounds good. That's where Jesus is at.
Well, as it turns out, that was like the window. That was the window to go to Afghanistan.
Yeah.
So 2001, you couldn't go to Afghanistan.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
2002, you could go to Afghanistan. I was there for 6 years. Mm. And almost the whole time, I felt very welcome there.
Yeah.
And I was openly there as a Christian.
Huh.
I did go to the visa officials, and one time, out of many times getting a visa, the official there said, are you a missionary? And I asked him, well, what do you mean by that? What is that? And he says, well, a missionary is somebody who forces other people to change their religion. Mm. And I said, well, that is against my morals. I that's terrible. I would never do that. And he's like, okay, good. And I said, well, wait a second. I'm a religious guy. Am I allowed to talk about my faith? And he says, sure, you can talk about your faith. And can I ask the Afghan people about what they believe? Yeah, you can ask them. And can I invite somebody to my home? And he says, yeah, you can invite someone to your home. And what if I get invited to their home? Can I go? And he says, yeah, sure, of course. What do you think? You know, we're hospitable people. And I said, okay, well, that's good enough for me.
That's amazing. Yeah. So did you just move there without an organization, or did you have an organization you were serving with or something?
I served with an organization there.
Okay.
And they're doing great work, a group out of Sweden. And it's a Christian group. And we were mainly doing educational projects.
Okay.
And so our organization built over 20 schools, and we trained a lot of teachers, maybe 200 plus teachers, and helped out with school supplies and set up an English language faculty in the university there.
Wow. Mm.
For me, the coolest thing about it was I could go to any school in the province, and immediately there would definitely be a teacher there that I know who would then be my representative, you know, introduce me to everybody else in town. And it was a really special time.
Wow. Amazing. Did you have to learn the language? You're fluent now in Farsi, is that right?
Yeah. So I tried to learn the language at the University of Washington,
which
was for me also confirmation that this is the right way to go, because there were at that time only 4 programs in the U.S. that offered Farsi.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
One of them was UW.
Yeah.
Wow.
So. Was this shortly after you prayed, Lord, what do you want me to do? He said this like
the next move.
And then like the next move was, all right, well, let's I guess it was like, let's look for an organization, and then let's get equipped in the way that's possible to
that's
make this
how it
happen.
Works. So Sunday he says, you know, I want you to do this. So on Monday I make up a list of these different organizations. I call them all up and I say, so, you know, I want to go somewhere. And they're like, how about Afghanistan?
Wow.
And I called 6 organizations and they all said, go to Afghanistan.
Wow.
And I called the 6th one, though. I said, really, Afghanistan? And they're like, well, what about Tajikistan? And I'm like, sold.
There's a guy at Imprint right now, and his heart is for Central Asia,
right.
Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and all that.
Yeah, he's wanting to get over there.
Anyway,
totally.
We've got to get a line on that organization.
Yeah, Michael. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So you did that. What was the how long of a gap was it between you saying, okay, I guess I'll do this, and then you have boots on the ground?
Well, before I went, I had to go to a psych evaluation and had to do...
Really? You want to go to Afghanistan? They just asked you that over and over again? Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
They, you know, it was a intense thing, and like a training and a prep and that kind of stuff. But it was, something like the training was in September and I left in December.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's a quick turnaround.
What did, what did the local church look like for you there, and then as well as for the people that you are sharing the gospel with?
Yeah. In Central Asia.
Yeah.
In Tajikistan at that time, there was a little bit of freedom for Christianity and for churches. Hmm. And so there had been a church planted there that was registered, a legal entity, and able to meet. And I was able to go to that church, and that was a great, great church. I love that place. And it was an attempt to offer the gospel in culturally relevant ways. So we had no chairs. We sat on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
We had little wooden holders to hold our Bible off the floor, which is kind of standard in a mosque. And had all locally produced music that...
Cool.
Some local musicians
in
May.
That's awesome.
So that was really cool to see that. In Afghanistan, there is not really a local church.
Yep.
There are isolated Christian believers, but there's not really a local church. There are some believers that meet together, but actually it's more dangerous for a foreigner to come and visit a group like that. So that's not something that I did.
You weren't doing.
Yeah.
Can you tell us, just for the listeners and myself, I looked it up afterwards, but where Tajikistan is at in Central Asia?
It's directly north of Afghanistan. So it's was the southern border of the Soviet Union. Mm. And it borders China, Afghanistan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan. It's, you know, a little country. Sometimes if you look at it on a map, I say it kind of looks like a rabbit.
Yeah.
So that'll help you to find it, maybe.
Yeah. So when your experience there, like, what was it like to be doing ministry on a constant basis with people there? Was it really difficult to share your faith? Was it something because you're a foreigner that they listened to you? Or what was your experience like there?
It was a kind of a magical time because, you know, Afghanistan, people think of the most restrictive Islamic country you can imagine, but they are very religious and interested in religion. And so they talk about it. Huh. Mm. And it was clear to everybody that I'm not from around here. So they come up to me and say, "Where are you from and what do you believe?" Huh. And I shared what I believed on a daily basis. I probably shared more often with more people in one-on-one conversations in Afghanistan than anywhere I've lived in my life.
That is amazing. Yeah. Did you ever feel threatened for your safety or anything like that, what you're sharing?
Not directly, but I didn't like it if there was a big group that gathered.
Yep.
And I do remember one time I was in the marketplace and we're having a nice talk with just a couple guys, but then pretty soon a few more come and there's like 20, 30 people all listening to our conversation about Jesus. And I'm thinking, this would be a good time to close this.
Shut it down.
Yeah.
Well, and that's not just for you, but also for their safety. If that success or that conversation successful.
Yeah. I mean, Jesus is one of the most celebrated prophets of Islam.
Sure.
So there's nothing wrong with talking about Jesus.
Yeah. Up to a certain
point. But it's like the Ryan Ephesus,
point.
Right? Or something
up
like
to
that.
A certain point.
Yeah. This man is taking all our people away from us, you know? Like, it could be something intense there going on. That's crazy. Yeah. So in your ministry there, sorry, Rex,
you got
a question.
Go ahead.
I'm super interested.
You are excited.
So
I can tell you have
questions.
Your excited face
I like
on.
This. I know. Yeah. Well, the thing, it's the same as my sad face, though.
It is. That's true.
The thing that's cool to me is that you have these experiences over in Afghanistan that like give you a chance to share the gospel all the time and things like that. Did you learn how to contextualize it in a way there that was different than kind of sharing the gospel here?
Definitely. So my go-to answer, you know, they ask, what do I believe? And I said, I believe that God, the one true God, created this world. He created Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve, they sinned. The world got broken. God sent his prophets. Hmm. And finally, he sent Jesus. He came. He taught with wisdom. He did miracles. And the people couldn't accept it. And so they killed him on the cross. And they weren't able to keep him dead. And he is still alive. Hmm. And he's coming back. And they would say, wow. That's just what we believe.
Interesting. Yeah.
Because the only thing in that whole presentation that's different from Islam is that Jesus died on the cross.
Yeah.
They would say all that stuff that it's all Islamic theology.
Yep.
And so the nuance there is Jesus did die, but
didn't stay dead.
He didn't stay dead.
Yes. Yeah.
And did that provide a bridge for talking about Jesus's identity, or did you kind of keep it there and flesh out what the death was about?
Well, mainly that I use that then as a bridge to talk about what Jesus taught about, because Islam honors Jesus as a prophet, but doesn't record any of
his
teachings.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, you know,
he's the way, but you don't know anything about him.
Right.
Yeah.
I did have a friend of mine. I gave him a Bible, which I didn't do very much, but I gave him a Bible.
Is it illegal to give out Bibles in Afghanistan?
No.
Okay.
But it's frowned upon.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Yeah.
And so he takes this Bible, and where does he? Immediately he goes to the religious officials. Immediately, and he goes to the religious official and says, I got this Bible. What should I do with it? And they said, read it. Just don't do what it says.
Oh, wow. Oh, man.
Oh, my gosh.
And I don't think they'd ever read it. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's amazing that they said read it, though. I mean, that's like a miracle in and of itself.
Well,
right
again,
there.
In Islam, there are four holy books.
Yeah.
Okay? The Torah.
Yep, yep.
The Injil, the books of David, and I can't think of the Arabic word for that right now, and then the Quran.
Huh.
So, and these are the four heavenly books, and their requirement to believe in these four books if you want to be a Muslim.
Wow.
So the Injil is the New Testament. So if you deny the New Testament, you can't be a Muslim. So it's kind of hard for a religious official to say you shouldn't read the New Testament.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That blows my mind. I didn't know that. That's crazy. Huh.
So, how long were you initially doing that? How long did that season last? I know you probably met your wife somewhere along the way.
That was 6 years, and I met my wife there. She was serving in Tajikistan. I was in Afghanistan, and I'd come up every 2 months to Tajikistan for church and for fellowship, and that's where we met. We met at the international church there. And when I met her, I said, I really like you, and I'm going to live the rest of my life in Afghanistan, and if you would like to do that with me, you're welcome, you know? So that's kind of like my sales
pitch.
That's
a great proposal.
Yeah, nailed it.
So romantic.
And her response?
It obviously worked. I don't know.
Well, she came down for a week to check it out. I think I might have said, you have to come down for a week to check it out. And she said she's up for it. So we were set to move to Afghanistan, live in Afghanistan, you know, and serve. And we did. We served together as a married couple for 2 years, but then the window started to close, and it was getting too dangerous to do any meaningful ministry. So we'd get security updates, and if the security situation was not good, then we didn't leave the house. And eventually, it's like, well.
You're just not leaving the house.
Yeah, right. Why are we in Afghanistan away from our family in this dangerous place if we don't have any contact with local people?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I have some friends who are missionaries in Egypt, and getting way to Upper Egypt, which is south, it was the same way. They couldn't leave the house anymore. They're trying to figure out how to do ministry there. And so they eventually came back to the States to be back and kind of travel back and forth now. But there were similar kind of really militant, hostile kind of areas there, which was tough.
So, what was your reaction to that? Because I know, again, you'd invested a significant portion of your life with these people. This had been, like you said, just a really sweet season of sharing the gospel really openly, and then having the door slam shut. What was that process like for you and your wife?
Well, at first, the feeling was, we've made a commitment. We're going to be here. Mm-hmm. We have radical obedience. Mm-hmm. We're going to stay here. We're going to obey. But we came to the conclusion that actually Jesus wasn't telling us, you have to do this. This was coming from us. Mm-hmm. It's like, I never heard Jesus say, you need to go to Afghanistan and stay there for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. That was my thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we just really felt a lot of freedom where Jesus was saying, if you stay here, I'll bless you. And if you go, I'll bless you. So choose your path. Where do you want to go? What do you want to do? And at that time, my mother-in-law was really struggling with our being in Afghanistan. She couldn't sleep. She was worried all the time. And we said, this is also not Christian witness to just ignore her and treat her concerns as if they are not important.
Yeah.
So we planned to come back to the U.S. But we first went through Austria because Austria churches had been supporting us mm-hmm. in Afghanistan, had also sent us out there. And we had 14 little churches, all with about 30 to 50 people that had been supporting us. And so we went to Austria and visited these 14 churches. And each one of these churches that we visited had at least one Afghan refugee.
Wow.
Usually sitting in the back of the church. Oftentimes, they didn't understand a word of German. And of course, the local church, they didn't have the resources to minister to them.
Yep.
And so that's when we realized God has a new season for us. Hmm. And we started planting an Afghan-Iranian church in Austria.
Oh, wow.
Afghan refugees.
Rad.
Yeah. And is there a lot of Afghan refugees in that area?
There are a lot. And I don't know the numbers anymore, but every year several thousand will come.
Interesting.
Oh, man.
And they're very open for the gospel. Like, just like I say, the Afghans in Afghanistan were open to hear about Jesus. But a good friend of mine in Afghanistan, he said, I wish I could have been born Christian.
Huh.
Mm.
And no amount of talking could convince him that there was another option.
When he says, I wish I was born Christian, is that because of the cultural identity associated versus the cultural familial identity associated with being Muslim? Or what did he mean by that?
I think he really liked Jesus,
mm-hmm.
and he liked what we had to say about Jesus and about how one can live in relationship with God. And he wished he could have that kind of spirituality for himself.
Mm-hmm. Did he just feel too entrenched?
Yeah, for him, it's just, you know, a leopard can't change his spots. You know, this is who I am, and it's good for you, but I can't, you know, that's not really possible.
Mm-hmm.
Brutal. Yeah, it's a hard thing to, I've heard time and time again, like becoming a Christian out of an Islamic environment, it's like basically negating your whole family and walking a different direction and kind of like, it can sometimes be a really lonely road. I've heard that. I don't know if you've seen that happen in the context of your ministry at all.
I've seen it happen, but it isn't always that way.
Good, good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the process for you guys planting a church in Austria that's...
I guess you planted in Salzburg, is that right?
Yeah. So we partnered with a local church, a German-speaking church, that had already started reaching out to refugees.
Hmm.
And initially, our strategy was to integrate the Farsi speakers into the German-speaking church.
Hmm.
But as there became more people, it became more difficult to integrate a large group. And so eventually we said the better strategy is to have two congregations.
Hmm.
That's what we did. I don't remember what you asked.
Did the German church allow the Afghan church to meet in their auditorium then or something? Was that kind of an evening service or a later service? Or?
So, I mean, at the beginning, they would meet within the normal service. And when we came, they were having a separate talk for the Farsi speakers in like a children's classroom.
Huh.
But immediately they said, we don't like this. We're grown adults. Yeah. We don't want to go with the kids.
Totally.
So we got headphones and did a simultaneous translation.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
But one of the things we saw is that the Bible teaching that was appropriate in the context for the German speakers was not touching the felt needs or the questions that the Farsi speakers had.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't really helpful to translate those messages.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then we started doing, it was a kind of like a youth group, you know, fully integrated into this church under the leadership structure, the budget structure of this church, but also with a lot of independence for what we teach or how we structure it.
That's cool. That's really cool. And how many, like, was it just you on staff? Was it you and your wife helping out? Like, what was the ministry environment like for you?
Well, they had one paid pastor for the German ministry and nobody else on staff. And then they would have actually needed a youth pastor and had been saving and planning to employ a youth pastor. And instead they employed me.
Wow. Wow.
That's like, yeah, that's kingdom work.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So they paid, and also we had supporters from the U.S. that paid to support that. And my wife worked alongside mm-hmm. me for a long time. And then we had a team of volunteers that also helped.
That's super cool. Yeah. Speaking of your wife, you have kids too. Tell us about your family real briefly here. Like, what was your wife grew up in Austria, but yeah, what was, how? Yeah.
Well, she grew up in Austria and had felt that she would serve outside of Austria. She never thought she'd be in Austria. When she met me, she said, "Don't bother learning German. We're never going to be in Austria." And we got married, and for 7 years, we didn't have kids. And that was a big struggle, especially because we were in Afghanistan. So for a woman in Afghanistan, your identity mm-hmm. is your children.
Yeah.
And with my wife not having any children, it was like a shame.
Yeah.
And it's in that culture, it's always seen, it's a shame on the woman.
Yeah.
If there's no kids. And after 7 years, our first son was born. And then a year and a half later, God blessed us with a second son.
All right.
So we've got two guys. They're 9 and 7. And very full of energy.
I got to meet them on Sunday. They were having fun. They were moving around in the auditorium here, which was cool to see. So, by the way, Gordy, I just have to say, you're like the most interesting man in the world. I mean, seriously, like, I start listening to your stories. I'm like, oh my gosh, you've seen a lot of world. You've been able to contextualize
the gospel
in so many different cultures. I mean, how random is it to move to Austria and do an Afghan community in Austria? That's pretty amazing.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you saw, again, it seems like your plan to come back to the States was interrupted by this amazing ministry. How long were you involved in this mm-hmm. church, and what was the goal for this ministry when you started it, and how did that morph over time?
Well, when we came, there were 9 Iranian and Afghan believers. And we figured we need to disciple them, build them up with leadership skills, and then we'll hand the ministry over to them, and they can run with it from there.
Yeah.
And we gave ourselves about 3 years to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And after 2 years, every one of those guys who were there had moved on to a different city, to a different church, still in contact with some of them, but none of them remained there at the church, and we had a whole new batch of new people.
Wow.
And so we had to do it all over again, and we had to
disciple 3 years.
These guys and build up leadership, and again, they would leave. And so we did this over and over, building into people, investing in people, and they would get up and they'd go to the next town.
You're the training center for the rest of Austria, essentially.
Well, we later did that formally. We would actually set up a little weekend Bible school where we'd bring in people from around the country and teach people. But yeah, it was really frustrating. And it's, you know, for us, we could see the big picture. And we could say this is kingdom ministry, but especially for the local church, it gets exhausting.
That's mm-hmm. hard, yeah.
Because it's hard to learn these names, it's hard to learn these people, and you're patient with them because they don't speak your language, but you have hope, they're going to learn the language, and eventually they're going to be able to integrate into the larger church. And that was the local church's dream, was these guys will integrate into our church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that dream never really came to fruition.
Mm.
What eventually, after 7 years, we had the first guy stay. And the thing is we're in not a small town, but there's the draw of the big city. And especially for immigrants, a lot of times they feel like the big cities were
opportunity,
right? And they were convinced that they wouldn't be able to make it in the small town. And so this guy staying, he got a job, he got an apartment, he stayed in town. That became a role model for the rest. And after he stayed, almost no one left.
Really?
Then they stayed.
Wow.
You can do it. You can stay here. It works.
Yeah.
It just took an archetype. That's crazy.
That's cool. That is pretty cool. How's the church in Austria doing? Like, just in the big C church, what's it like right now? We hear stories of Europe. Like, what is it like?
Well, the big church is going through a reality check. Austria is supposedly a Christian country, but every year, thousands, tens of thousands of people leave the church. Hmm. And so now about 55% of Austrians identify as some form of Christian.
Mm-hmm. Does that include Catholic?
That includes Catholic and Lutheran and then evangelical, which is very small. Maybe around half of 1% would be the evangelical church. Mm-hmm. And every year, these traditional churches are just losing members. And these people that leave are not people that are recently dissatisfied, but they're people that for decades have not really identified with the local church or with this faith. Yeah. Hmm. And so now they're finally saying, well, let's just make the reality.
Yeah. It's been a dead marriage for decades, and let's just file for divorce.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So I have friends that are working in the Catholic Church, Catholic guys that are working in the Catholic Church to re-evangelize the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And that's the terminology that they use. Mm-hmm. Because they realize if it doesn't happen in this generation, they're really going to lose
a lot of it. Yeah. So you guys are working with this congregation for years and years. You say you're sending all these people out, and finally someone stays and there's some traction there. When did you start feeling like it was time for something different? When did you start feeling God kind of lead you to the next thing?
Well, it happened on one day, one specific day. I remember that day very well. We had just finished an outreach in the city, and it was a German language outreach with the Farsi speakers and the German speakers together, and they did it all without my help. I just was kind of a bystander at the whole thing.
Nice. That's cool.
And the Sunday afterward, they were one of the brothers from the refugee church was preaching, and they led the worship, and they led everything. And I, again, just very clearly, like that first call, I heard, you've done it. That's it. That's what I wanted you to do.
That's awesome.
And even more, I want you to go. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not welcome here.
Get out of the way.
Oh, wow.
Get out of the way. Yeah. Get out of the way. That was really the message. Where as long as I hung around, they are going to look to me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally.
They were going to wait for me to do stuff, wait for me to do leadership. And I needed to get out of the way so that they could really take the reins and really go forward.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're kind of the ceiling if you hang around, whereas God might have higher aspirations that would work better. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ironically, just when you're starting to see some success and the Lord's like, yeah, you're done now. That's a little rough. Like, I would imagine there's got to be some desire in you to want to stick around and see these people through the ministry and what they're doing. But instead the Lord's like, you know?
Well, you know, I still am in relationship with all these guys.
Yeah, that's great.
And so I find now my ministry with the Farsi guys is just so cool. I get to just call them up and talk and pray with them, and I don't have the headache. And
totally.
Just can be. It's kind of like people talk about being grandparents. You know?
Oh, yeah, that's
come take care of your kids. Yeah.
You can
and
come
when you're done. You just give them back to the parents.
Encourage them and feed them junk food. Yeah,
that's awesome.
That's great. So what did God, and again, God says, essentially, you're not welcome here anymore. You're done. You kind of had, I guess you guys probably went back to the drawing board and asked what's next.
Right. So, you know, one of the things first came up, we checked out Tajikistan.
Yeah. You know?
That's where we've been.
Worked once before.
It was good memories. You know, that's where we met. And what do you know, the organization we were with before was looking for somebody to lead the whole country work. And look, the job description fits my profile perfectly. They were looking for a number two person. That's exactly my wife's profile. And it's like, well, that's it. And a mentor of mine sent me a Bible verse. And he never does.
There's the Bible again. Yeah.
And it said, do not think about the days before. Mm-hmm. Do not even consider it. Behold, I'm doing a new thing.
Yeah,
do you
not perceive it? 41, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And so sometimes my wife is much more astute than I am. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, that's it. No Tajikistan. And I'm like, well, you know. Maybe the old thing is what was in Salzburg.
Yeah, there you go.
You know? And she's like, think about it. How, if God wanted to speak to us through the Bible here, what Bible verse could God have possibly used to say, don't go to Tajikistan? And I'm like, well, what about that guy who told Paul, you know, don't go into the province of Asia?
Yeah, that would have been
clear.
Yeah, totally.
So we weren't going back to Tajikistan, and we thought about coming to the U.S. Looked at different opportunities, but we became convinced that God wanted us to work in Austria. Hmm. And, you know, when I first started to get to know Austria, the local churches were talking about a church plant for every community with 5,000 people. Mm-hmm. And it was a huge vision. And maybe it was too big of a vision because it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to talk about it anymore. Mm-hmm. And now there are some church plants. Most church plants are with migrants. Mm-hmm. That's where you see all the growth.
Interesting.
And those church plants for Austrians are all in the city. Mm-hmm. And I applaud this. I want more church plants, and I'm glad they're doing it. They're doing great work, great ministry. Mm-hmm. But there is almost nothing going on in towns smaller than 15,000 people.
Yeah.
Well, it's like you said, you know, the city kind of draws people in, and it's not often that people leave the city for the country, I'd imagine. Hmm. You know, because that's opportunity. Again, it's easier to find a job in the city than it is out in a rural area. There's more opportunity, different cultures coming together, places to live.
Well, the common wisdom says you should do a church plant in the city.
Yeah.
If you're talking about Tim Keller, our older guy, Baki, he used to write about the city is where it's at. And I was always a big believer in that. But, you know, what I've come to find, this kind of like trickle-down...
Economics
or trickle-down evangelism. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The idea is if we reach the city, the countryside will also be reached. And I don't think that works. Hmm. I haven't seen that working. Mm-hmm. People go to the city and stay in the city, but who's going to go back and reach the countryside?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you're a guy who's had to see the gospel be contextualized in whatever area you've been in. So, I mean, that comes with some authority when you speak that. Like, I have to go to this rural community and actually speak the gospel in the language that they understand, which is different than the language of the city many times. And so that makes sense to me that there would be some level of, like, I need to go to this place and they need to hear the gospel from someone who lives among them. That kind of reminds me of someone, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And so you've been, what's been like, what got you to this place where you're at, and what are you doing there?
Well, we were praying for somebody to do ministry with.
Yeah.
We knew that our gifting was not to go to a place with no Jesus followers and just
start something from zero.
The entrepreneurial kind of.
Well, yeah, entrepreneurial, but not this networking.
Yeah.
This close to people and picking up the people from zero. But we're praying for a small group or a Bible study or another couple. And we met another couple. He's from Switzerland and she is from East Germany, like before the Berlin Wall, East Germany.
Yeah. Wow.
And they had just moved to this community where we're serving when we met them. They'd moved about 1 month before, and they shared about their challenges and their hopes and how they had moved their thinking that the Christians there just need some encouragement.
Mm.
And then they realized they need a church plant.
Yeah.
And they said, we need a team. We would have never gone to start a church on our own. And here we are. And we'd been praying to partner with somebody, and it just really fit. And so about 2 years ago, we moved to that area. And I think a big part of our job still today is rebuilding relationships. Mm. There had been a church plant there about 40 years ago, and it had done great work. I think they did a really great ministry. But somewhere in there were a lot of hurt relationships and a lot of divisions because of theology. Mm. And the church basically dissolved to where it was like 5-6 people.
Mm.
And so I think right now our job is to restore the relationships with those people who have heard this message already, and then to cast a vision for a different kind of church. There's only one church in this county with over 30,000 people.
Wow.
And that means practically it's going to be a diverse bunch.
Yeah.
Because you can't just pick out which church really fits me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And before, I think the church was trying to force everybody into one particular mold.
And not recognizing the diversity of backgrounds or...
Recognizing and seeing that as a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
That needs to be
even
stamped
worse.
Out.
Dang. Yeah.
And so...
You have to believe X, Y, and Z secondary, tertiary issues.
Yeah.
Rather than let's gather around Jesus and the gospel.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Like, or redefining the gospel as including all these
yikes.
Other things.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah, we've seen a little bit of that in the last couple of years. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... That's kind of, I think, our thing. Restoration and then casting a vision for a big tent church that
Sweet.
Can still be very faithful, extremely faithful to the pillars of the gospel
right.
while allowing and enjoying the diversity in the body.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super
that's
cool.
a beautiful vision.
Yeah, it's compelling when you see people committed to one another as family who disagree on things that in any other context would they'd just separate.
Yeah.
But staying together despite those things.
Yeah. Practically, are you guys meeting on Sundays and things like that now as a community? And what's that community look like right now?
Yeah. We've been meeting every week since we came 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The Corona situation came and, yeah, I think there was some times when we couldn't even meet outdoors because of the restrictions that were there.
Yeah, you said you came to the church 2 years ago. That sounds like a weird time to come to a church.
It was weird. It was weird. But we came in a window when it was allowed to see people.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That was good.
Good.
And then I was allowed to meet outdoors. And we didn't have a building and we weren't paying rent anywhere. So that was good.
Nice.
And so we started meeting at the lake. And we met every week at the lake, whatever the weather. So when it rained, we were
awesome.
At the lake.
That's awesome.
When the lake froze over, we were at the lake. And
Sweet.
When there was 2 feet of snow, we were at the lake.
That's amazing.
And my wife did the kids program there in the field and would laminate the kids program because she never knew what it was going to
be. Today we're making snowmen.
Yeah.
That's our craft.
Yeah. And we did that for about a year, and we're now in a building.
Cool.
That's great.
A Christian real estate investor has the vision of getting churches into buildings.
Hmm.
And one of the main thing for his vision is no more designated buildings that are just for churches.
Huh.
But he wants to rent these buildings out during the week, use them for office sharing or whatever you can rent them for, and then the churches have a place to meet on Sunday or for offices and these kind of things. And he bought a old theater building, so not a movie
cool.
theater, but
like an old
stage,
stage
theater.
Yeah. Wow.
For us, and renovated it.
Wow.
And We pay rent, but at this point, it's absolutely not profitable for him. He's losing money every month, but he's done this because he has a vision for us and for Austria, and he's put in his money where his mouth is. You know, he's investing. Actually, a lot of we have supporters who also invest with him to build these houses up, and his goal is that we would reach a level where we're so financially stable that we could buy the building back from him.
Wow.
I like the way you're articulating that. It's not that he's donating or giving away money. He's investing in Kingdom Work.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
That's really cool. Well, what is, you've been there for 2 years. What are some high points for you looking back? What's been encouraging for you? Where have you seen the Lord working specifically in the past 2 years? It sounds like that's one thing.
You've got definitely the building.
Who's got a vision like that from of a kingdom minded economy, basically not worried about what's the return on investment for me here. That's pretty cool.
Well, certainly this building is a huge high point, and it's not just a theater, but it was actually part of a monastery.
Wow!
And so it was dedicated to Kingdom Work.
Wow.
Sweet.
And there was a time when the Catholic Church would never sell anything to a church, the evangelical church. But they sold it to us because we are a church, because they recognize that we are preaching the gospel.
Wow.
And so for me, that is huge.
That's beautiful.
And the future of this, I mean, this is right in center of town. It's a meeting place, and that's huge. Another thing that is huge for me is one guy who was once upon a time part of this community, was even an elder in the community, and he left saying, I'm never going to go there ever again.
Mm. Wow.
And he's coming.
Oh.
And even more, he said, my brother never came to the old community. And he's brought his brother a couple of times to our services. And that shows me the amount of trust and faith and acceptance.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Because you don't bring your family, don't bring your friends to a place where you think this might not be a good thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. That's beautiful. Well, you're stateside for a little while longer. One thing that we know you're going back in just a few weeks. One thing that we have asked all the people of Imprint Church as they're listening to this, basically right when the podcast is over, to stop and pray for whoever we've talked to. So, Gordy, how can we pray for you? And your church is called Free Church, is that right? So how can we pray for you, specifically you and Tapita and your family? And how can we pray for Free Church?
Well, pray for Tabita and me, and also our close teammates, our partners in ministry, Dave and Ellie. We really long to work together as a team and just really thrive with each other. And that is a big prayer request that we have, that we can all be serving in our gifts and be flourishing and just enjoying ministry, that it wouldn't be just hard work, but it would be a joy for all of us. And for our church, things are just getting started. So pray for growth, pray for God's blessing. Mm-hmm. We are in the new building, but we haven't had our grand opening yet. That's going to be in October.
Oh, wow.
And then we're going to start presenting ourselves to the community. And so pray for that.
Yeah.
How can people find you, Gordy? Like, if they want to connect with you and say hi or anything like that?
Send an encouragement.
You can. My personal homepage, webpage is thebex.at.
A-T.
Okay. A-T for Austria.
Yep. Thebex, B-E-C-K-S.
Yeah.
Thebex.at. That's cool. Yep. And do you have like links to social media and things like that if you are on social media?
But I'm not really on social media.
I relate to
that's
that.
Healthy. Yeah. That's healthy. I like that.
That's really cool. Yeah. Yeah. I would encourage you, if you can, reach out to encourage Thebex, the family, and the work they're doing. I think revitalizing a church is a different beast altogether than kind of planting a church or And so you're in a world of learning as you go, I imagine. I think the image we've always used is you're kind of building the plane while it's flying a little bit in a church planning environment. I think it's even more unique for an environment like a revitalization. So yeah, please Imprint Church or whoever's listening to this, stop and pray for Gordy and the team. Tabita and Dave and Ellie, you said are their names. Yeah, pray for all of them to learn how to go forward and what the Lord is calling them to do. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, Gordy, thanks for spending the last hour with us. It's encouraging to hear that the gospel's on the move, not just in, you know, we kind of get stuck in the northwest of the United States, but it's cool to hear about the gospel being on the move abroad as well. And thanks for being obedient. It's cool to hear how the Lord has given you freedom, not just opportunity, but freedom in following Him. And you've used creativity and you've been obedient in doing that. So keep up that good work, and we'll be praying for your work in Austria. And if you ever find yourself outside of nowhere in Austria, stop and say hello.
Yeah. Well, and you guys are just always welcome back. Love to see you. Thanks for coming to Imprint on Sunday, and thanks for like sharing your story a little bit. It's compelling mm-hmm. to me to know that Jesus is among the church in Austria as well, even in the middle of a culture that's, what'd you say, kind of reinventing itself, figuring what they're doing in the future. So that's cool to hear. So thanks for sharing your story with us.
All right, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. We will be back next week with another story after the little stinger thing is, after you hear my voice, stop and pray for the Becks and pray for Free Church. We will see you next week.
Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.